White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 451.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we had a really cool basketball game over the weekend. We had signing day. The old signing day kind of came and went. Actually, more stuff going on right now than you would at first guess. And so we got a few things to talk about this week. We've had, I think I'm pretty much done with all my illnesses now. So I should be back up to, I think I'm not
Better
even
be
going to.
Knocking on wood when you say that.
Yeah, well, I'm back behind me. I don't have to play the Gus Van's health sound effect anymore because I'm good. So. But, yeah, man, there's been something going around. Even the basketball team had it this week. You saw that Purifoy was sick and a couple other guys. Yes. Yeah, there's definitely something going around. I mean, all over the country something going around. I don't mean the coronavirus. I mean, like, there's some
flu rates are very high.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of flu combo bronchitis stuff going on.
Yeah, that's kind of what I had. I had kind of a flu that turned into pneumonia and had me down for, like, 3 weeks. And I couldn't even walk up the stairs without sitting down and gasping for breath. That was horrible, but yeah, that's it. It's one of those things that takes a while to go away, but I think it has. I'm good now. Hopefully it won't come back anytime soon. So I think our first stop should probably be that big LSU game. I've seen people calling it the game of the year. I tell you what, those fellas on our basketball team, they sure do know how to live dangerously and make you like they take it about as far to the limit as you possibly can take it. And I think I've got my name for this episode now, but they take it to the limit about as far as you can take it to the limit before they come back and win. And that's been like three of the last four games. The thing that's so amazing to me is that in the last four games, the only one we didn't have to go to overtime to squeeze out was Kentucky. We actually beat Kentucky pretty handily. The others, we've had to go to freaking overtime. How crazy is that?
It is crazy. And it's, you're right, they get pushed to the limit, but it's also like they respond when the other team is pushing the limit. And these are good teams.
No doubt. I
mean, Kentucky and LSU are really good. So.
Well, there's no doubt. The fact that we won that game still just seems utterly absurd to me, because we were shooting about as poorly as we have all season, right? Especially now, I've got to say in the first half, and that's the way it's been all season, right? We somehow remember how to shoot better in the second half, but we go through these long dry spells, particularly at the beginning. But LSU was playing well the entire game. I've gone back and watched the highlight. I mean, I watched the game live, and then I've watched the highlight, like, 12-minute clip on YouTube twice, because I've been trying to figure out exactly how we won. It's not readily apparent, if you watch that game just once, how we did it. And, in fact, you'll notice people that say they turned it off for a little while, or they had to go do an errand and came back, and they're all, like, befuddled how we could have, you know, come back. And I think, let me run you through a couple of things and see if you agree. If this is what happened, okay, so we got out to an early lead, which was shocking, but then we went totally cold. We kept trying those long outside shots that just weren't falling. And next thing you know, it goes from like 12 to 8 Auburn to like 29 to 12 or something. I mean, it was just ridiculous. They got out to this huge lead in the first like 10 minutes of the game. But here was the thing. Every time they pushed the lead past 10, okay? And there was like three or four different occasions in the game that this happened. Every time LSU pushed the game, pushed their lead out past 10 to like 12 or 14 or 15 or whatever, every single time they did that was when we would do a little scoring run and get it back down to 10 or to 7 or something like that. So one of the keys to the game was, even when we weren't playing particularly well on offense or defense, because I felt like LSU could score every time they went down the court if they wanted to. We weren't even beginning to stop them. I know that we shot a whole bunch of threes by the time the game was over, but it's still, looking back, it feels to me like LSU didn't miss a three-point shot except for the very last one. It feels to me like they hit every three-point shot they made, and we never could stop them when they would drive to the basket. Okay, so every time they'd push the lead out past 10, that's when we'd go on one of those little runs and pull it back to within 7 to 10 again. And so even though they dominated most of the game, and even though they led by double digits, it seemed like, most of the game, they never ran away and hid with it. They were always just on the edge of being able to reel them back in, okay? And then, of course, what finally happened, we had a run about 12 minutes into the game that kept it close, you know, and then right before halftime, they pushed it back out to like 15 or something again. But then we closed out strong and pulled it within like 12. And again, they just couldn't ever run away and hide. They were within 12. And then the second half, they started pushing it out again, and we went on another run about halfway through the second half, about 30 minutes into the 40-minute game, and that was the time we pulled it to like 4. And that's when you kind of felt like, okay, here we go, right? Here we come. And then they pushed it back out to like 12 again, but they couldn't run away and hide. And then we made that last big run where we were hitting all those crazy three-pointers with like, what, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, like a minute, right, to go in the game. And with, you know, just the last few seconds on the clock, we tied, and then they missed that shot. And so that took us into overtime. And then the funny thing in overtime is it had a personality too. And again, I've watched it 3 times, so I can tell you this. In overtime, they scored first, but then we went on another one of those runs, and we were up like 8 or 9, it seemed like. And I'm like, oh, we win the game, right? And then they came back, and they came back, and they took the lead with like 10 seconds to go, 9 seconds to go. And that was when Javon went down and laid it in with 0.1. So that's kind of the sense I got from how the game ebbed and flowed. Do you have, what was your perception? Is any different?
I think you're right. It was really big that we kept them within striking distance.
Always.
You know, that was kind of how the game went. They would go in these spurts and we wouldn't. We'd be missing shots, but we always kept them within distance that we could close by the end of the game. We never let them get away. And I think it shows a lot of mental toughness for this Auburn team. The other thing is, like, when you were watching it, what was your reaction, like, the last 5 minutes of regulation and overtime? Because I was so pumped watching the end of that basketball game. I literally, more than any game this year, I was just fired up when we came back and tied at the end of regulation and won the game in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was such a great comeback. And I think, you know, LSU showed some toughness by making that run in overtime because, honestly, I think they were a little bit shocked.
Yeah.
You know, they had done all this and they hadn't beaten us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you could tell at the end of regulation that they couldn't believe it was tied and that they were having to go to overtime because they've been kicking our butts since it was 12 to 8 our way, right? I think it was like 12 to 8. It was something like that. But as soon as we got to like 12 to 8, they absolutely shut us down and ran off and almost ran away and hid. And they were ahead the whole game. And so you know they felt like that they had us down. Like, you know, if it was wrestling, we were pinned and the referee was like 8, 9, and then we popped up, you know. And it's like time after time they had us pinned for the 10 count and at 9 we popped back up. And usually it was because either McCormick or Cambridge or Doughty hit a 3-pointer. We were really missing Purifoy's three-pointers at the critical moments in this game. We needed his offense because Purifoy wasn't there at all, obviously being sick, and McLemore did virtually nothing in this game, certainly on offense, that I remember. Am I misremembering?
Mm-mm.
And so this game really came down to the scoring of those three guys, the two guards and then whatever position Cambridge. I've said it before that I have no idea. You know, other than Javon being the point guard and Austin Wiley by default being center because he's Austin Wiley, other than that, they all just kind of run around. I have no idea what positions they play.
Say he's a wing or...
Yeah. I'm assuming Samir is like the shooting guard. Sometimes he's the point guard, sometimes he's the shooting guard just by necessity. But anyway, it was those two, the veterans, and then Cambridge kind of stepped in for Purifoy to be the scorer, which is the second game this year he's done that. And of course everybody's heard the story now that when the coach called Flanagan to go in for Cambridge, Flanagan's like, "Coach, he's on fire. You know, don't take him out. Leave him in." I thought that was really cool. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to assume he was sincere, right? It's not like he just didn't want to go out there. It's like
he's a competitive player. He wants mm-hmm. to play in the games, but he also knew like Cambridge was feeling it, and the team needed Cambridge
yeah.
at that moment. It's a very unselfish thing. So I respect the heck out of that.
Yeah. Man, if we could get Cambridge to do this every game, it would be like getting back a little bit of that Bryce Brown that we're missing, you know?
Again, he's a first-year player. I mean, he's mm-hmm. only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about him, and I think, you know, he can be more consistent. He can make some plays on the road. I think, doing this again is going to give him more confidence. I think... The biggest thing I thought was you were right that in the first half, they ate our defense up. Mm. I mean, it wasn't just that they were making a lot of more open three-pointers they normally make. They got a lot of easy drives to the basket.
Yeah.
Where they were not interfered with at all, which really bothers me. There's nothing I hate worse than an opposing player getting an easy run to the basket to get a layup.
Walks Nobody right up and puts it in.
Yeah,
that was one thing I wanted to ask you about. I have never seen a college basketball game with fewer fouls.
I mean, some of that, again, is the refs choosing not to call. It doesn't mean there wasn't contact in that game, because there was.
There was, sure. But
at times, both coaches kind of lost it about that, the fact that they weren't calling anything. I mean, you know, when you saw a different player, you saw Samir talk to the ref when he got hit on the arm and that kind of stuff. So, but the refs, it's one of those things like, how's it going to be today? And in that game, it was, we're not calling it.
It was just weird that like with like 2 minutes to go in the, and again, this is generality, it's not specific, but with very little time to go in the game, we had like four fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, I was trying to explain to my wife, I'm like, I said, that's weird. And she's like, well, isn't that good? I'm like, well, it's one of those things where in a way it's good, but if you need to stop the clock, you know, you're just going to be giving them the ball out of bounds again.
It is good because it's hard to get the ball in bounds sometimes. So it's
But I mean, you know, when you want to put them on the line, when you're wanting to send the other team to the free throw line, you have to start fouling constantly just to get to the bonus.
Yes.
When you don't have seven fouls, and that's one of those weird things. It's one of those weird things about basketball that sometimes having a bunch of fouls is actually good for your strategy, and we didn't, but they didn't either. You know, it was just a strange. Strange deal. And you know, we missed three critical in a row free throws in overtime that would have iced the game. Mm-hmm. Two of them, I think, were McCormick. And then one was the first of Samir's. And go ahead.
You were right earlier that I mean, we got to say it. McCormick has had some tough games. In the two games that we lost, you know, a couple weeks ago, he was not good. And Pearl set it out back. We need to get better at point guard. But he's been really good the last two games. Hmm. And in this game, probably his best game of the season. Not just scoring, but making stuff happen.
I just don't see how he can hit these crazy, improbable three-point shots that he did, and then he just can stand there and miss free throw after free throw. But it's the same thing with Okoro. I mean, if our games come down to Okoro and McCormick having hit free throws, we're in deep trouble because, my gosh, they are just not consistent.
That's why we give Samir the ball at the end of the game.
Exactly.
And he was great. Again, I think he went through the rough patch a couple weeks ago. You know, this team, lost those two games, those two road games a while back. And since then, you know, they've won six in a row. Three of those were overtime games. All right. And, you know, in those losses, in the loss to Alabama, we scored 64 points. In the loss to Florida, we scored 47 points.
Ugh.
Okay.
Ugh,
since brutal. Then, since then, 80, 83, 75, 79, 91.
Yeah.
So just, and the overtime helps with that, but the offense is, I think, improved, clearly gotten better since those two games.
Well, those two games were the depths of our situation where nothing goes in. And I don't just mean we shoot a bunch of three-pointers and miss because yes. we're not a great three-point shot. I mean, the Alabama and the Florida games were the games where Wiley would stand directly under the basket and all but dunk the ball and it would bounce back out. It was like in those two games, there was like nothing we could do to get the ball to go in. It had an invisible cover over it, and it just rolled off over and over and over.
100%.
It's bizarre. And if you just can't ever get a shot to go, you're going to lose. You're only going to score 47 points. It's just how it is, you know. So, but I tell you what, I'd much rather lose to Florida in the regular season when it doesn't matter so much than lose to them in the postseason. And the last two times we played Florida, we won the one that mattered.
Yep.
And we might see him again, but if we see him again, I don't think it's going to go quite like that. I mean, we might not still win, but we're going to do better than 47 points. I guarantee you that. We got to get better, and we are getting better. So,
that's right.
Well, certainly it was a big win. I mean, that was the thing for me is I like beating LSU just because it's LSU, and I like winning an SEC West game or SEC game, I guess now. But they were the number one team in the conference in terms of conference play, and they were, you know, cruising toward the the SEC championship. Somehow they lost to Vanderbilt, which is just – they gave up, what, 99 points to Vanderbilt?
Mm-hmm.
I just figured that's one of those fluke things that happens and you don't worry about it. They didn't look like a team that loses to Vanderbilt when they played us.
Mm-mm. And – they didn't. They look great. I mean, their two guards are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The two LSU guards. And, that LSU team, when they get in the NCAA tournament, if they're playing well in the SEC tournament and they look good, I mean, I think with those two guards, they're going to do some damage in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. They lost to Vanderbilt, and then they came into Auburn and lost. And now there's a three-way tie atop the SEC regular season standings with us, Kentucky, and LSU. And we have the tiebreaker.
Over both.
This is why it was such a big game, because we haven't played Kentucky again, but we only play LSU once.
Oh.
And we have the tiebreaker on them.
I didn't realize that. I'm still in this West-East mindset, like in football, you know, where we play Kentucky once and LSU twice. So that's – I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Yeah, I know we got to go back up to Rupp. I have to go up to Rupp. We haven't we haven't been yet. And I don't have high hopes for that one, to be honest with you. You gotta feel
that's where visiting teams go to have bad days,
but we got Alabama coming up Wednesday. We'll be recording this on Monday here. Alabama coming up Wednesday.
7 Eastern, 6 Central on Wednesday.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to at least I'm glad we're not starting late. And at least late here. And I feel like it's going to be a different story playing them in Auburn Arena than it was playing them over in the joke on the capstone. So that's good. And then on Saturday, I have tickets to that game because it's at Missouri, a nice 2-hour hop, skip, and jump to our west here. We just crossed the river and head across I-70 toward Kansas City about halfway. And that game, I think, is at 5, so we're going to head over in the morning and go bump around Columbia a little bit, and then maybe go to that really good pizza place that we found out about when we were there for the football game in 17, and then go to the basketball game, and then come home. We don't even have to spend the night. It's great. We got tickets. I got good seats in that arena for like $20 each.
Mm.
I paid like hundreds of dollars to see us beat something called CSUN in Auburn in November, but I paid $20 for an SEC game in February. Go figure that. I can't even fathom how that happens. But yeah, I paid like $20 a piece, and I got good seats in that arena. So I guess we'll call them and tell them what time we'll be there, so they'll know what time to start. All right. Any other thing about the basketball team?
No, just that the schedule's tough in the second half after Missouri. You know, we go at Georgia. Mm. We play Tennessee at home on a Saturday.
That'll be a good game.
And then we play Ole Miss at home on a Tuesday again, which they kind of have our number.
Yeah, but it's at home. That helps.
It does. And then we go to Kentucky the next Saturday. That'll be a huge game, probably a big TV game. Then we have A&M at home, and then we finish the season at Tennessee.
Okay. So,
some tough games left.
Yeah, I can see us losing the Kentucky game and maybe one more if things don't bounce the right way. I think if we go on a bad streak, we could lose three. But that still just puts us with five losses, which we would still be, I think, in contention depending on how the other teams play.
Again, this season has already exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because of who we lost and, you know, who we had coming back and where we were. I mean, I thought that, you know, my goal for the end of the season was, you know, 22-10 and a better than 500 record, you know, like a better than 500 record in the SEC. So we're going to far exceed that. So now it's, again, I don't look at the polls and I don't care. It's just about, you know, making the tournament and seeding and playing well there.
Yep. All right. Well, we did have some football news. For one thing, we are down one booby. I hate losing him just because, you know, you and I have said many times before that even though Whitlow has never really been a prototypical SEC starting tailback, what he has been is the guy that found a way to get the job done a whole lot of the time against Alabama, against Washington, against Oregon. You know, in the bigger games, even if he sometimes fumbles, in the biggest games and the key moments, he's just like relentless and spins around and finds a way to get the yards and not go down until he's got them. And none of the running backs on our current roster that have been playing can do what he could do. So we're going to miss him in that way. But on the other hand, we've got Mark Anthony Cleopatra. Richard. I mean, Richard, yeah. We've got him who should be really, really good, and he'll be healthy presumably this year. And we've got Tank coming in, even though he's a true freshman, but Whitlow plays a freshman. And so in other words, we've got – I know DJ Williams had a good game against LSU on two plays, but – I'm going to be honest with you. I keep hearing people talking about how great DJ Williams is, and I was hoping he would be. He has yet to really impress me. He seems like the guy that gets 1.5 to 2 yards up the middle and gets stopped, and I just don't really see what, you know, I want him to get me excited. He just hasn't done it on any kind of a consistent basis yet. Not the way that Booby could. So what's up with Booby? Was it his grades or something? Is that the story you've heard?
I appreciate everything he did for Auburn.
Oh, yeah.
He, like you said, he played really hard. I think there was some stuff, you know, it's coming out now, going back to last season, where his relationship with the coaches and the team wasn't great, that he was maybe late to some practices and missing class and that kind of stuff. And so I think there was kind of – I think it's a little bit of a mutual parting of the ways where, you know, they said, if you're going to be here, this is the way it's got to be. And he was like, I'm go do this somewhere else.
Do we know where he's going yet? Has there been any word?
No, he hasn't said. I think he's still, you know, probably talking to schools. And the other piece is, again, like you said, I think he's a solid running back, but I think his ceiling is lower, you know, than Mark Anthony Richards or Tank, probably DJ Williams. And so I think for the running game to get better, we need to get the carries to those guys. And so the good thing a little bit in this situation is we don't have to worry about Auburn doing the, well, he's the experienced veteran guy. We have to give him the carries the next 2 years when we have the more talented younger players that we need to get the ball to, that would make the offense go better. So I think in some ways it's kind of, you know, I'm happy. I hope he has a great success somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, that it's. I mean, again, if it was 2 years ago or a year ago, I would be freaking out. But I feel like we have the depth now, and you know, but the thing of it, when I think about it, the thing I think he actually could do, DJ Williams strikes me as the kind of running back that if the offensive line is playing really well and opening holes, he can smash through and get you some good yardage. But he's also the kind of running back that if the offensive line isn't making him a hole, he's not shifty and quick enough laterally to do more than a couple of yards. Whereas Booby's thing was he could create space to make extra yards by himself. He wasn't as reliant on the offensive line to create a situation for him. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's the thing I will miss about him, I think.
That's fair. I think he was very good at that kind of stuff. I think the biggest thing that he lacked was kind of there was a hole, kind of the explosive gear to get through there and turn it into a 30-yard gain instead of a 5 or 6-yard gain.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And hopefully some of these other backs can bring that to the situation.
That's why we didn't really have a feature back last season, is because DJ needed better offensive line play to be effective and he wasn't getting it. And Booby could create on his own, but like you said, once he did, he still wasn't going to be a breakaway type threat. So, and you know, Shivers was, you know, other than like that one run that will live forever in the Iron Bowl, he never really had a super, super moment either. And so we need for Richards and Bigsby to come in and be prototypical SEC backs, and then let these other guys be the change up, you know, and be the supplemental parts. That's what we need. So,
yep.
We have a new defensive coach.
Yes, Al Pogue was hired. You remember that our safeties coach, who had come from Memphis, went to Florida State to be with the Memphis staff, back with the Memphis staff that he came from. They made one run at, you know, Marcus Woodson a couple weeks ago or months ago, and offered money, and now he stayed. And then they came back and offered a bunch more money, and he went. And so then Auburn was, you know, without a defensive coach, you know, for, I don't know, the last month. And they took their time looking around. They didn't rush into it before signing day. We weren't signing any defensive backs on, you know, signing day anyhow, so it didn't really matter. And they wanted to get it right. So they hired Al Pogue, and I think it's a good hire. It makes sense to me. He's got a good reputation. He was a high school coach in Alabama for years. He and his wife are from Mobile. He was a offensive quality control assistant, you know, in the early years of Malzahn. And then has been off doing other stuff. He's at West Virginia. He was at Troy with Neil Brown, and then he was at West Virginia last year coaching linebackers and stuff. But he was a defensive back in college, and that's his natural kind of coaching position. Okay. And when he coached DBs, you saw a big increase in like pass breakups and turnovers created and that kind of stuff. So good. I think that's an exciting thing for me. And he's supposed to be, you know, a good guy, so has a lot of energy and the players like. So I think, you know, probably be him, McGriff back there. And last year they didn't split it up where one was the safeties coach and one was the cornerbacks coach. They just both kind of coached all the DBs and split the stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll work. We'll see how they do with that.
So what about little signing day, as I guess it is now? I saw that it was no drama, right? We got who we thought we were going to get. We didn't get any big surprises, but we didn't get any bad surprises either, right? So
that's right. And again, it's nice to have days like that. And again, the early signing day is the signing day now. This is like the supplementary signing day. and so, you know, we signed the two JUCO defensive linemen that we thought we were going to get. The one that committed earlier, and then Burks, the defensive tackle, and then we signed the big tight end out of Texas. So, you know, that's it was exciting, but, you know, no big offensive tackle or any of that kind of stuff. I think we'll see. I think Auburn probably has a couple of scholarships out there they can use. If there's a grad transfer offensive tackle or a grad transfer punter or something that comes along that they like, they could use one of those guys. So we'll see what happens there.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about the roster we have now and where things stand. So lead us into that a little bit. We can talk about it.
Sure. So my idea is we'll do defense today and come back and do offense next week.
Okay.
Or 2 weeks from now, whatever. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to talk about is kind of like just not crazy, but just kind of position by position, who's gone, who's back that played last year, but also who's new, so who's around that didn't play last year, right? And so I think that, you know, that will be interesting. And then we can kind of talk about who are we excited about out of the guys that are back. All right.
Okay.
So, you know, defensive line is easy, right? I mean, again, there's Buck in defensive end, and then there's two defensive tackles, right? Yep. So, you know, Buck is the pass rushing end position, and defensive end is the Marlon Davidson position.
Yeah.
And we haven't had a really good Buck, in a couple of years.
Yeah, it's since I mud, whatever.
Yeah, Carl Lawson, and then Jeff Holland.
Holland is the one I was thinking of. It was like the last one, yeah.
We haven't had a guy like that recently. We need that. We need more explosive edge. So, I think Derek Hall played a lot this year as a true freshman at Buck. I would say he's probably the favorite to start. In the same group, you got T.D. Moultrie. Colby Wooden was redshirted last year as a freshman. I think he's got some potential. And Romello Height is the true freshman we got away from Miami.
A
smaller, skinnier guy, but, you know, really has some good burst off the edge that they like. He does not weigh a lot. Redshirt him to put some weight on him, but, you know, maybe he can come in and play, just as a pure pass rusher. Moultrie's the guy who everybody thought would be his position and he'd own it and be a star by now, but it just hasn't happened. So.
Yeah, it's been really weird. I haven't really understood why whatever issues he's had, but he's certainly had some issues, right? I mean.
Mm-hmm. And then, so at the other end, at Marlon Davidson's position, you got Big Cat Bryant, I suspect, would be the starter there. And then Zacchaeus Walker is the freshman, Daniel Foster Allen's another freshman. But Zacchaeus Walker is the high-profile freshman who really was kind of built to play this position. I think a lot of – if you had to bet money on any freshman playing, you know, or starting at some point during the season, I think you could see a situation where, you know, Big Cat Bryant moves back to the other side and Zacchaeus Walker starts if they think he's better. Mm-hmm. And you know the defensive coaches, you know, Garner and – stealing them, if they're the person's the best, they're going to play him. So I think that's this guy I'm very excited about.
So all right, that's defensive line. Linebackers, you have to think. Is there something else you want to say about the defensive line?
No, just defensive tackles, real quick.
Oh yeah,
we lost one of the best ones ever to play at Auburn, maybe the best one ever, Derek Brown.
We did,
and Nick Coe, who played some tackle and some end. So we got Truesdale back at one spot, and then the other spot, you know, would be Daquan Newkirk or Coinus Miller, and a couple of guys behind them. You know, Jaron Handy played a little bit this last year as a true freshman. Jay Hardy's the guy from Tennessee that was secretly signed, in this class. And then Caleb Johnson's a guy that redshirted last year that has potential. But I think, you know, that. The drop off from Derek Brown to, you know, Newkirk or Miller is gigantic, and those guys got to step up and play better, or somebody else at that position has to step up and be a difference maker. Maybe it's one of those other guys.
Well, I feel like we may have lost our 11s, but we've got just a whole bunch of 7s and 8s and maybe 9s in there, and so. You know,
and maybe that some of the, you know, these two guys like Miller and Newkirk have been kind of solid guys that have played a little bit the last couple of years. But maybe one of these younger guys can step forward and be like the next man, you know?
Yeah.
And again, linebacker, easy, you know, we got everybody coming back and a bunch of new players.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's got to be the position on the team that's like in the best, certainly on defense, that's suffered the least attrition, right?
Oh yeah, I mean no attrition at all. We had one guy who was like the third or fourth string guy, Harris, transfer away because he wasn't going to play.
Right.
But so you got Britt and Chandler Wooten, Papo and Zacoby McLean are all back.
Man, Papo really impressed me as a freshman last year. He was all over the place.
You know, but you know Britt and Wooten are both seniors.
Yeah.
And McLean's a junior, so we got to look at some young guys behind them. So we have a bunch of guys we recruited the last couple of years. You know, guys that were redshirted last year are Marsh, Cameron Brown, Derek Brown's brother, and OC Brothers. And then we got a couple of true freshmen, Desmond Tisdall, Wesley Steiner, Cameron Riley. So we got super talented young linebackers. And I think the one thing I take away is like those young guys ought to be like all over special teams and stuff, making stuff happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're right. That is the, if there's one position on the team where we have the most talent and the most depth and the least, you know, depth worries, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Good old T. Will. Good old T. Will. Secondary, I feel like we lost even more than we thought we would because Iggy's gone. I'm going to miss talking about Iggy. So what have we got left? Do we have anything coming back that we can hang our hat on, or are we kind of starting over like with the offensive line?
I don't think it's the offensive line situation. Again, I think nickel, we got Christian Tutt back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and we got behind him, we got Jordan Peters, who always plays a little bit in secondary. And then we got a freshman named Ladarius Tennyson, who a lot of people think, you know, is like the perfect nickel back. That he's really good at coverage and a good tackler and stuff.
Lord Tennyson.
So he's the future, Lord Tennyson. and then at safety, we lost the true seniors who are great players.
So what you're saying is in our secondary, though we are not now that which we once were, that which we are. Two corners and two safeties in perfect harmony. Okay, you get the idea. I'll work on that. I have it coming. All right.
Not bad. But at safety, you know, we lost the two seniors who were so good. They're going to be Daniel Thomas and Denson. Mm. But we got Smoke Monday and Jamie and Sherwood, who are both juniors now, who have been sitting on the bench and playing, you know, a few, you know, 15, 20 snaps a game the last 2 years. And they're ready. And I think we're going to, it's to me, it's like the linebacker position this past year.
Yes.
We lost, you know, Deshaun Davis, those other guys. I felt pretty good about the guys coming back. And I feel good about these two.
Yeah, that was the thing last year. I remember is that the national sports media were saying, you know, oh, Auburn's got to replace all those linebackers. Auburn's going to be bad at linebacker. And we're all going, we're going to be fine. And we were, you know. It's like, yeah, they did. They just didn't fully appreciate the amount of talent and experience that was there among players that hadn't been starting so much. And I think, yeah, that's the case again. So that'll be good.
And then we have a guy we redshirted last year named Zion Puckett, who's supposed to be pretty good. But then we got the two big freshmen, Eric Reed and Chris Thompson. Thompson's from Texas and Reed's from Louisiana. Those are both four-star safeties signed out of high school. And I think they're the next, you know, Sherwood at Smoke Monday. Those two guys, Reed and Thompson, are going to be playing a lot this year, and they're kind of the future at that position. Mm. And then at cornerback, we lost Igbenogany, and the other guy, Javaris Davis, was a senior. But we do have Roger McCreary. Mm-hmm. So he played a lot this year. He's like a definite starter at one of the spots. And at the other position, you know, we signed a JUCO cornerback named Marco Damio. Mm-hmm. And so he's got to be the favorite. But then we have a couple of other kind of talented guys that were played a little bit last year. Nehemiah Pritchett probably is the favorite of those. So it's probably Domio or Pritchett for that other spot opposite McCreary. And then we got some other backups that, you know, have been around, including still on the team, Devin Barrett.
Yes. Devin Grinnin Barrett. Oh, man. He was Joiner before Joiner was Joiner.
He was.
Gus has that. Gus always has to have that one player on offense whose only job is to come in and drop the swing pass. And I just like to point out that the swing pass is supposed to be there as an escape valve, but Gus uses it as the primary receiver with no other options, and so therefore, when that player comes into the lineup, everybody knows he's going to get the ball, and he does, and then he gets clobbered, and then Gus is like, oh, he didn't get the job done. And, well, everybody knew what was coming, and they had 11 guys on him, and everybody else was uncovered, and you threw it to him. So, see, as Pat Nick, as Bo Nix gets older, I can see him checking himself out of those kind of plays, but we'll see. Like he did in the very first game against Oregon with Stove, you know, he saw the yep. saw the opening and just went for it. And I'm sure Gus is like, no, you don't need to be doing that. That ain't the play call I drew up. That's not how you do it. So we'll see. I don't mean to be jumping on Gus. It's just that's one of the things I really do think is a legitimate complaint is the whole you started this by mentioning Devin Barrett, and you knew you were opening a can of worms when you did.
I knew as soon as I said his name, I was taking the can off.
So. Here we go. Yep. So, okay.
The big thing for me about that discussion of the secondary is, yes, we lost a lot of people, but it's not – as scary as you think it is from that sentence where we lost 4 out of 5 guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys back there who played. I mean, we got Tut back, but I mean, we have McCreary back. We have the two young safeties who played a lot. So really, I think it's just one spot where we're starting somebody really that we haven't seen, play before. So I think that's big.
Speaking of highly touted offensive players who end up playing defensive back for us, Trovon Reed is on the roster of the St. Louis Battlehawks, which is our local XFL team. He's on injured reserve, so he didn't play yesterday when St. Louis won their opening game. But I think they played Texas, the Houston or the Dallas. They played the team that Stoops coaches in Texas. I can't remember if it's Houston or Dallas.
It's the Dallas team, I think.
Yeah, and they won, but Trovon did not play, unfortunately. So. I'm not planning on trekking over to the dome. They're going to play in the same dome where the Rams used to play, which everybody hates because it was the last. From what I understand, our dome was the last one built before they started doing like roofs you could see through to let light in and stuff or can open. So ours is just like a convention center. It's just like a hard roof that won't move and is dark, and so everybody hates it. So, but that's where they're going to be playing. So. Very exciting. I really don't care about the Battlehawks. I know you find that hard to believe because I've always been into the minor league teams of football, but that was because I was from near Birmingham and it was all we had. But see now, it's all we have here in St. Louis. St. Louis is going downhill in a way that makes Birmingham look like Atlanta. It's ridiculous, man. This place is dying. I'm surprised it's still bigger than Birmingham. So anyway, all right. So let's see. Is that all the secondary?
That's it.
Okay. So what are you thinking about all this overall then?
I think before I sat down and did this and thought about it, I was more worried about the defense. Mm-hmm. But I think especially with the strength at linebacker and the guys we have who played a lot because they played a lot of playing time, mm-hmm. and stealing them and rotated them in over the last couple of years, we have a lot of guys with experience. They're going to be stepping in. So I think I think the defense is going to be solid. It's going to be good. The question is, are there difference makers? Against good teams, are there guys that can help us get off the field on third down, that can make a big tackle, that can get some pressure on the quarterback, that kind of stuff? And we have to see.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that we've recruited really well, particularly on defense the last few years. We've got depth across the board now. We just don't have a ton of A, starting experience because so many of them left, and B, like you say, difference makers, players that can go out there and change a game, in one by themselves, basically, making a play. And so I feel like we're going to have one of those sort of bend but don't break defenses, sort of a no-name defense where everybody just kind of contributes a little bit. There's no, there's no Derek Brown. There's no Nick Fairley. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? But there'll be a whole lot of sevens and eights just kind of getting the job done. I mean, this defense to me has kind of got the person, just at least in my mind so far, we haven't seen it on the field, but I am suspecting that this defense is going to have the personality of a Travis Williams, T-Will, mm-hmm. which is nothing exceptional, but just solid and knowledgeable and dependable and getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
So, you wanted to include special teams too?
We can do those with offense. Be right.
Okay. All right. Well, that just leads us to our little pause here where we had to thank the folks who keep our show going. We had a couple of weeks off there when I was sick and couldn't really do anything, but now we're back and we're either, in the off season, we're either weekly or biweekly pretty much at worst. I also point out that we have our video live shows on special occasions on Sunday afternoon. Almost did one yesterday after the LSU game on Saturday, But I was out of the house most of the day, and John was, I'm sure, doing stuff, and it was just going to be hard to coordinate. But we do still kind of have that out there, that every now and then when the spirit moves us, we'll do a live video show. They're a lot of fun. We had Jared on for the last one. All of which is to say that hopefully you're getting your money's worth, right? Because we need your support, pay all the bills, and keep things going, keep the lights on in the studio, and keep us broadcasting. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can join the crowd that does that. We appreciate all you fine folks. This is the off season of football, and so our patrons tend to kind of drop a few off. We understand that. We want to encourage everybody to stay year-round. We try to do things to keep everybody excited. We're going to have the basketball tournament coming up soon. We'll have Formula One coming up soon, the Fantasy League. We've got a bunch of other stuff planned and coming. I'm working on the next episode of We Believe that'll be out soon. So you got a lot of bonuses and things coming out pretty soon. But for as little as a dollar a month, if you're not a member already, you can join up and help keep our shows going by just going to www.auwishbone.com. auwishbone.com, there's a big orange link that says click here to become a patron, and you sign up and you can keep us going, and we'll mention your name on every show. In fact, over the last few days, I posted, Alan and I did our big review of Skyfall. John, you know that 2 years ago, Alan J. Porter of Bond Lexicon, he's a huge James Bond expert, he and I started our one-a-month walk through the Bond movies in order leading up to No Time to Die. And No Time to Die comes out in April, and next month is March, we will do Spectre. So we did it. We're going to have put out one Bond movie review a month for 2 years, and then we'll get the new one out. So there's that. And then I also, if you haven't noticed, you guys, just this morning, I posted the solo show I did on White Rocket talking about Winds of War and War and Remembrance. Basically, over the holidays, I rewatched both miniseries. I got the big giant books for Christmas, and I read most of both books. I have them on Audible too. And so I just go through for about 45 minutes and talk about, you know, notable things about those two miniseries and cool things about them, and kind of analyze them and compare them to the books and compare them to each other, and just talk about the, you know, the World War II experience and all that. So, you know, go and subscribe to the White Rocket podcast, and you can catch the stuff that we do, the pop culture stuff like that. Okay, so for as little as a dollar a month, you can help those shows on the air. Here are our current patrons that are keeping things going here in the White Rocket Studios. You have Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson, of course. Then there's Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, Wynn Carroll, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. And then we have Winston Boddy, Clinton Stewart, and Christopher Stewart, Mickey B, William Moore, Morgan, Phil Davis, Joshua Corbett, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Alchemist, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson and Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, and Rich Reimer. And we're getting into the home stretch here. We have Hugh Anderson, Blake Heron, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Milling. We've got Kevin Kanoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And then at the final set, we have Jeremy Minton, Wardam Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Eilif, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, and that's the truth, Ruth, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Joseph A. Miller, and Mark Squire, along with the awesome Surfer Chickify and our one-time and occasional donors like Chris and Brent Rumble and the others. You guys are awesome, and we super appreciate everything you do to join those ranks and hear your name and be part of the back behind the scenes stuff. www.auwishbone.com. All right, and tell a friend about the show. John, let me go ahead and do we have any listener questions?
We have two.
Well, that's enough to hit the button and go to the House of Commons.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister. It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What do we got?
All right. First question is from regular question asker, Preston Settle.
Yeah, Preston.
Is Auburn versus Kentucky basketball game now considered a rivalry game? In the past, it seemed Auburn just had a goal of beating Kentucky in a basketball game. Those wins would come once every blue moon or so. Coach Pearl, the Auburn staff, and the Auburn roster have turned this into a rivalry game, War Eagle.
Isn't that interesting? I have actually heard it referred to that way. I'll put it this way. I think that Auburn always dreamed of it being a rivalry game, but you have to win more than once in every 20 games for something to be a rivalry game. So what's happened is we wanted it to be a rivalry game. We dreamed of it being a rivalry game, and we've suddenly started winning more often than losing, which has sort of dragged Kentucky kicking and screaming to the realization that whether they like it or not, it's a rivalry game. Now, I think another thing that makes it a rivalry game is that, you know, Ole Miss, we could have a really good rivalry in basketball with Ole Miss, but nobody cares. You know what I mean? It's that it's Kentucky. Who doesn't want to have a contested rivalry series with Kentucky? Everybody. There's literally not a team in the country that wouldn't want to say we have a rivalry with Kentucky. So the fact that we've imposed a rivalry upon them, whether they like it or not, is kind of the thing. Do you agree?
I do, but I'm also like, do they really think it's a rivalry?
Well, that's what I'm just, saying.
You know what I'm saying? Like, or have we just beaten them a couple of times? I think we got a ways to go before it's a rivalry. I think Kentucky fans would be like, pfft.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's no way they think it is. But no. But we
are the annoying upstarts.
But yes. But we've put the series in a position where we can call it that, and they have to at least take playing us seriously, whether they take the overall series seriously or not. Okay, and so at least that's the first step. You got to start somewhere, and that's the first step.
That's fair.
Okay.
The second question is for me, and Justin Lee, the sports writer for the Auburn of Lincoln News, asked this question on Twitter this weekend, and I wanted to ask you, how would you compare the current Auburn basketball team to the 1993-94 Auburn football team and the run they were on and those games?
Ooh. Well, the very first thing that comes to mind for me is even when 93-94 was happening, in the back of our minds, we kind of knew we were doing that with smoke and mirrors because we could see that Terry wasn't recruiting at a sustainable level. We could see that he came in with some fresh ideas and some fresh energy and took Pat Dye's kind of moribund roster and offense and shook things up a little bit and put some razzle-dazzle in it and won us a whole bunch of games. And we were thrilled with that. And I'll always be appreciative to Terry for those 2 years. Those are great. You can say whatever you want about – I don't care. You can say whatever you want about Terry Bowden or Tommy Tuberville, honestly, now. But, you know, those 2 years – holy cow. I mean, I was so appreciative. Now, the thing is with Bruce Pearl, I feel like unless like all the other coaches or the NCAA just decides to try to, you know, pump up some charges against him because they hate him, I feel like he's doing something much more sustainable. This feels more real to me. This doesn't feel like smoke and mirrors. If this was smoke and mirrors, we'd have won the SEC 2 years ago and then been down last year, and then Bruce would have been fired this year. But that's not happening. We're bringing in five-star players. So I feel like the results are kind of similar. But beyond that, Bruce Pearl is not Terry Bowden, and Terry Bowden is not Bruce Pearl. What do you think?
No, the lack of sustainability under Terry is fair. I was thinking more about the way the games are kind of this never say die.
Yeah.
Improbable comebacks.
That's true.
A different guy every week kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that is where my mind went with the comparison.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's true. The 93 team in particular that went 11-0, they came from behind against almost everybody, including Southern Miss. We were down like double digits to Southern Miss in that game in 93 and came back and beat them. So it's fair to
every game was a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and because of the way that team was built, there weren't any 3-2 games, you know. That wasn't a team that was going to shut the opponent out and win 6-0 or anything. That was a team that was going to give up 24, 27 points, and they just had to find a way to score 28, you know, and they did. They always did. They had a good kicker. They had a good senior quarterback. They had a couple of NFL running backs. I always just say this about the 93 team. You know, like some friends of mine went to Florida, were saying, like, how did that 93 Auburn team go 11-0? They didn't have, you know, they're always like, they didn't have any depth. They didn't have any great players. I'm like, if you look at the roster on the 93 team, they didn't have any depth at all, but they had like one all SEC or future NFL player at basically every position. Right, they had a great kicker, they had a great punter, they had a senior quarterback, they had two running backs that went off and did well in the NFL, they had an NFL receiver, they had NFL offensive linemen, they had, you know, they had those great defensive backs that just intercepted everything thrown out there. The only weakness really was linebacker. Didn't have a great defensive line, had bad linebackers, but everything else. So they just had they had just enough at the right positions. And I mean, if you look at our basketball team, certainly this year, you know, again, there's no super, you know, scorers really, but yeah, it's a different person every game, and they're just finding a way to get it done because they have a really, really good player at every position, pretty much. So yeah, that's one way to look at it.
I think the other thing is, like, winning is learned behavior on some level.
That's right. That's absolutely.
Believe that you're always in the game, then you are always in the game.
Yeah.
And they kept coming back and kept coming back. That's my thing about both these teams. And I have to say, like, we asked a week ago, you know, we talked about the comparison of this basketball team to last year's basketball team and how we'll always love that team forever and never. Mm-hmm. All that kind of stuff. But I love this team a lot more after Saturday. I know that. Yeah. And it's not just because they won. It's because of the way they kept coming back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The thing that was so impressive to me about that game was that they could look so inept on offense and defense for long stretches, and you'd think, how did this team win 20 games or whatever? And then they would flip a switch and look like national champions. I mean, I was thinking if they could put together a string of games where they played every game the way they played 10, 15 minutes of that game against LSU, they'd be national champions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't missing anything. They were playing great defense. You know, they don't turn the ball over the way last year's team. The two things last year's team was really good at, other than point guard play in the tournament season, we just kind of turned that on at the end of the season. But before that, for the entire season, what made last year's team so good was that they could shoot three-pointers, everybody basically, and they turned the ball over a lot. This year's team doesn't steal the way that our two guards last year would steal it, but they play such lockdown defense that they and then rebound, you know what I mean? So instead of taking the ball away from you every trip down the court, they just make you get a bad shot off, and then they get the rebound, which is
a lot of times other teams don't even get a shot off.
Or don't even get a shot off. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Oh, they have surely already created more shot clock violations than last year's team did all season long, including the Final Four. Because I don't remember last year's team getting a lot of shot clock violations. This team seems to get like two a game. So,
I think
you're correct. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Yeah, I tell you what, you and I both, we've always been big Auburn basketball fans. We've watched them through thick and thin, and we've suffered through some bad years. You and I got to enjoy those 80s teams with Sonny Smith, and we enjoyed a few of those Tommy Joe Eagles teams. Da-da-da-da-da. And we enjoyed some of those Cliff Ellis teams for sure, but it's like all these years in basketball purgatory, we're being rewarded for our faithfulness by getting to go to Bruce Pearl's heaven, you know? Mm-hmm. All those years we spent in purgatory, and we now get to go to heaven, the heaven of basketball, and Bruce Pearl's got his little wings on, flapping around the gates, and it feels mighty nice.
All
right. Any around the SEC stuff we have this time? Oh, I see a couple of things. Yeah, what on the list here? Let me hit the button. What are we going to do, Mira?
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
All right.
And you're heading down to Missouri this weekend for the basketball game. I thought it would be interesting for you to know. I was reading a thing about the Missouri staff, and of the core of that staff, not just Drinkwitz, was formed when they were all basically grad assistants at our, you know, off-the-field, you know, football staff at Auburn under Malzahn. They were the other guys up in the booth on game day, Drinkwitz and three other guys who are now on the Missouri coaching staff.
Oh, wow.
And their running back coach is Curtis Looper.
Oh, wow. I wondered where old Looper had gotten off to. I always liked him. I always thought he was a very effective coach, a very good recruiter and stuff.
So he's been at TCU, and so now he's back. He's at Missouri, again, with the three other guys that were on Malzahn's staff in the early days, and that went to Arkansas. Some of them went to Arkansas State with him too. So
very good.
The only thing I want to say is there's a, you know, Boobies Whitlow's in the transfer portal now, but there's a lot of other transfer portal stuff happening to other SEC teams too. If you missed it, like Felipe Franks, the Florida quarterback, is now at Arkansas.
I totally missed that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, that there's a lot of other stuff going on, I think, when that happened. And then, Starkle that was there at Arkansas left to transfer to San Jose State, the bad team that beat them.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And then Jake Bentley, you know, got hurt and then got beat out in South Carolina. He transferred to Utah.
Oh, that's weird.
So that will be weird and interesting to see how he does out there. I mean, that's a good team. It's losing a good quarterback. So
South Carolina, Utah, they're similar.
Well, I mean, in a football sense, they're both kind of defense-first teams.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
They aren't going to put too much on the offense and stuff. So I don't know.
Didn't we have a kid a while back that transferred from like Mississippi State to BYU or something? And I'm like, oh, that's going to go smoothly.
Well, no, we were joking last week about the guy that went from Stanford to Mississippi State.
Oh gosh. Oh, there's just too many jokes. I don't even know where to begin. I'm just going to leave it alone. Leave it alone.
That's about it for this week.
That's about it. All right. Well, we've put in a good solid hour here. That's good enough. So I reckon when next we speak, I will be back from Columbia and can give a little report on what it's like to see a basketball game there. I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping it goes about as successfully as our trip over there for the football game in 2017 did. That was a lot of fun, even though it was hot as crap. So that should be a lot of fun on Saturday if the weather's good, hopefully. And then I guess we'll be able to talk about the Alabama game coming up on Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to getting some revenge on those fellas, and I think we should be able to. Hopefully Purifoy will be back, and nobody else will be sick. So wasn't half the team sick in the Final Four game last year, it seems like, now I think about it?
There was something.
Yeah, there was something, yeah. All right, well, I guess our time is up, and we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
I just got through watching I'd watched it in the theater last year, but I got through watching Godzilla: King of the Monsters. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, I love that movie. So, I mean, it's not great. I like Kong Skull Island better.
Yeah.
Again, it's a Godzilla King of Monsters movie. Not enough monsters fighting, too much people talking.
That's exactly right. But you just can't beat at the end when all the other, after he kills King Ghidorah and all the other monsters come up in a circle around him and you're like, oh, here we go, right? and they all bow down. And then Rodan, who's just a punk, right? Rodan is the punk of the monsters. Mm-hmm. And Rodan comes up and is like, I'm good. Every time I crack up when Rodan like starts to get Rodan, like, I'm going to say something. No, I'm okay. I'm good. And he kind of like bows down and God is like, I just love that. Also, I think Rodan is my favorite part of the whole movie because he also has that funny bit where he's about to kill Mothra and all of a sudden Mothra's little stinger comes through him and he's kind of like, oh, and he looks down at it like, what just he doesn't have to say anything. He's just hilarious. Every his expressions and everything. Rodan's like the comedy relief in that movie. It's great.
I like Rodan's destructive power too. That's always funny.
He just flies around. Everything catches on fire under him. It's crazy and burns and blows away. Yeah. See, I'm trying to explain to my family that Godzilla is like the hero, and Ghidorah's. I was watching one of the little after the show extras. And the production designer guy said that basically Godzilla is Batman and Ghidorah is the Joker. I'm like, exactly. That really sums it up really well. Rodan's kind of like the Riddler or something, you know? Just a punk. Can't really do anything. He's just kind of annoying punk that you slap around. Maybe he's Batmite. I feel like we need Brandon Marcello in for this conversation.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.